This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Are you a Burger Boy or a Burger King or a Whataburger fan? What is your go-to choice? What does that say about you and about America when it comes to fast food? Fast food is huge. Getting your arms and your mind around it is a challenge. And so if we're going to solve some of the big challenges to our planet, like climate change, too much plastic, some of our health issues, then we've got to go through the drive-through. This is a community conversation. We're going to be talking about fast food. What are your fast food dreams? So your drive-through dreams, you can give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. You can also email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at @tprsource. We're joined this afternoon with Adam Chandler. He's the author of Drive-Thru Dreams, A Journey Through the Heart of America's Fast Food Kingdom. And also Mike Sutter. He's the restaurant critic and food writer for the San Antonio Express News. Welcome both of y'all to the Source.
Thanks for having us today.
Yeah, thank you so much.
So Adam Chandler, you write in your book that the term fast food is actually not the term that these restaurants, these chains prefer. Why not? And what do they call it?
Well, chains themselves prefer quick service restaurants or QSR, which, I think has a better connotation to it than fast food, which I think has become a euphemism for things that aren't prepared naturally and things that are, you know, heavily processed. So that's probably one of the biggest aspects of it.
So, Mike Sutter, what is fast food?
Well, I think by definition, it's something that augurs closer to convenience than it does quality or healthiness or something like that. It's we want to get it as quickly as we can, get in and out. Oh, hey, there's an idea right there. And have something that's not breaking the bank, that we can feed our family. I remember when Patrick Terry opened P. Terry's in Austin, for example, a burger chain, small regional burger chain there. He teared up when he was telling me about how he could feed a family of four with burger, fries, and a drink for under $20.
Yeah, and so that gets to the heart of what we're talking. The fast foods, it's a huge American phenomenon. It works. It's a billion-dollar industry because it solves a problem for many people on a day-to-day basis. They got to eat. They're rushed for time. They don't have a lot of money. And the marketing has been put in front of them, and they want to go to a fast food restaurant. So Adam Chandler, do you think that we have to do away with this sort of looking down on fast food?
Absolutely. I think a lot of the criticism that you hear about fast food is often pushed on the consumer when really the entire food system has, you know, sort of systemic inequalities and inefficiencies in it that make fast food, you know, artificially inexpensive and food that is better for you more expensive. And so I think that's more of the problem than people who are stressed for time, who may not have the wages that they need to or the time to splurge on a more, you know, expensive or enlightened, as some of the critics of fast food will call it, food.
So, Adam Chandler, tell me about your book, Drive-Thru Dreams. You tell the story of many of these chains, and each one sort of has a mythology behind it. What did you find?
Well, what's impressive about the fast food chains themselves is they really embody this American dream. Harmon Dobson, the founder of Whataburger, is one of those characters that sort of ran from job to job. He sold peelers at a county fair. He sold used cars after World War II. He had all of these odd jobs. He was a diamond dealer at one point, and eventually found his way into hamburgers and made a go at it. And it was a small business that kind of expanded. And a lot of the fast food chains have these kinds of stories. Wendy's.
Sure, but somebody want to pause you real quick. So
sure.
The vision they had for Whataburger is that he wanted to have a burger that was big enough that you had to hold it with both of your hands, right?
Right, exactly. The burgers were smaller at the time, and this being a Texas burger, you needed double the hands to hold it.
So he wanted to get away from the sliders and more towards a Whataburger.
Exactly. He had to go into a special business with a baker to make a hamburger bun big enough to hold a 5 ounce burger. And it was one of the first burgers that really kind of became a jumbo burger in the way that we know it today.
And come on, you guys, you know, you've got to pronounce it Whataburger. Let's get a little breathiness in there. Show some respect.
I guess so. I can see one from here, from the window of the studio. So
there it is.
You know, and so that mythology, people know these stories, or they love the swap stories about these types of drive-through dream establishments, Adam. So and go on. I stopped you as you were telling other ones.
Well, there's so many. Dave Thomas of Wendy's fame, he was an orphan who struck out on his own to work in his early teens. Harlan Sanders, the infamous Colonel Sanders, sold chicken on the side of the road during the Great Depression and didn't find success until his late 60s, selling his fried chicken to sort of mom and pop shops around the Midwest and Appalachia.
And I'm sorry, Adam, including, by the way, Earl Abel's restaurant here in town started its fried chicken operation as a Harlan Sanders offshoot.
Right, right. There are stories of this sort of, this entrepreneurship that kind of just took hold. It's very kind of pull yourself up by your bootstraps, that American dream mythology that, you know, we're so fond of, that doesn't quite resonate the way that it used to. But we love to hear those kinds of stories because it really is what you think of when you think of American opportunity and sort of the ideas we were raised on in this country.
And the McDonald's story with the McDonald brothers that started it, and Kroc taking them big time. Is that how that worked?
Yeah, the McDonald's brothers were a great story of two guys who went out to Hollywood to try and make it as producers and ended up becoming hamburger meisters instead. And they created this restaurant that was so efficient that it drew people from all over the country to come replicate it. Glenn Bell, who founded Taco Bell, the two founders of Burger King, all kind of saw what was happening at the McDonald's shop and copied the idea of making this really assembly line intensive, highly technical sort of burger stand work, you know, disposable wrappers, no wait staff, that kind of thing. And it really took off. And Ray Kroc famously came along and saw it, and he had a grand vision for it. He wanted them to be everywhere. And so he made it happen. He eventually wrested the company from the two brothers and bought them out in a controversial deal. And now McDonald's is the juggernaut we know it to be today.
It's not unlike like the Facebook stories that we tell today and some of the tech entrepreneurs that we have, except that they weren't coming up with some apps. They were coming up with ways to feed lots and lots of people with low cost. You know what you were getting. And this is how America, it was a part of the changing America as we went from back roads to an interstate highway type of a world. And it's still changing today. What people are expecting when they go to a drive-through, a fast food restaurant, what do you expect? What do you call for? What's your favorite? How does it define you? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. We're talking about drive-through dreams here on The Source. Stay with us. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about fast food restaurants, also known as QSR, which is what the industry calls quick service restaurants. What do they mean to you? How does it resonate with you? It has changed America. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. Let's get Michael on the line. Michael on the air. And Michael, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
All right, go ahead.
Okay, so I wanted to ask what percentage of the slaughterhouse industry products go towards fast food, and if this is a concern for any of the fast food industries, and if you're concerned about using products from any rainforest, deforestation or anything?
All right. So, Michael, thank you for that call, because that really kind of gets to where I really want to take this conversation. We can have our nostalgia and talk about fast foods and how much we enjoy certain items, but also these this has an impact on the world. And if we can figure out how to enjoy our fast food, but also nudge the process in a more healthy way, then all the more better for everyone. So, Adam Chandler, can you talk? You're the author of Drive-Thru Dreams, A Journey Through the Heart of America's Fast Food Kingdom. Can you talk about the impact that the fast food industry has on, like, the slaughterhouse industry and also on deforestation?
Absolutely. Well, obviously, the impacts are huge, and it's an enormous problem. There is part of the conversation that comes up where people talk about fast food as something that they love and something that they hate. And then there's this nuanced middle where a different kind of conversation is having about what the future of it is going to look like. So it's interesting to see how environmental movements and health movements have really influenced fast food. McDonald's has pledged to stop using palm oil that is linked to deforestation. And it'll be interesting to see if they actually follow up on these things. You know, millions of Americans are going to try their first plant-based burger by way of the Impossible Whopper, which is, you know, the Impossible Burger offering at Burger King. So it really reacts. Fast food reacts to the American sort of public's demand for change. And it moves very slowly, but the more pressure that's put on it, the faster the changes come. And so, and that way, we think of fast food as really being huge and monolithic, but it's also really receptive to what its consumers want.
The Impossible Burgers or Beyond Meat products that are showing up on menu items, is that seen as the future of fast food, or is it just a temporary gimmick, like, you know, the fried chicken between two glazed donuts? I mean, what is that?
It's too early to tell, unfortunately. You know, it would be great if it becomes the future. And there are plenty of reasons to criticize it, too. Actually, if you eat an Impossible Burger, it's not actually that much better for you physically. It's better for the environment. But in terms of, it has GMOs and it's processed and it has a lot of calories. So it actually isn't that much better for you than a regular Whopper if you're just looking at it from a health perspective.
Well, I think, too, that's part of the false progress that's sometimes represented by the industry. When we start talking about fast food places that have introduced salads, and you look at that salad, and by the time you add the dressing to the Bacon Ranch salad, it's 1,160 calories. The equivalent of what you would have gotten having your burger and fries. So you've got to look at it with balance toward your diet. I used to talk about how a single Five Guys burger meal would cost you your entire caloric intake for the day. And if that's what you want, approach it that way. Have that be your only caloric intake for the day. It's sort of that splurge mentality.
Okay, and but that point about an Impossible Burger or Beyond Meat type product still not being a healthy choice, but as it's no less healthy than, or it's not dangerous, right?
It's definitely not dangerous, but if people are looking to create alternatives that are going to change the American diet or change the way that food enters sort of conscious consumption, These measures, and Mike said it really well, these sort of half measures or false promises are not necessarily the answer. But, you know, it's a question of whether we have enough time and a long enough view to kind of focus on slowly changing people's minds to consider different things, or if we're really in a crisis. And there are a lot of people saying both.
Okay, and Mike?
Well, I think there's another example of that. Malcolm Gladwell's podcast, Revisionist History, talked about the crusade to get rid of beef tallow fat for frying McDonald's French fries, which produced a much better fry, but people were concerned about the saturated fat. And it turns out that the switch to the substitutes for beef tallow maybe introduced health problems that were, if not as significant, possibly even more significant.
But there were also vegetarians who didn't know that it was beef tallow in the frying oil. So they felt that betrayed by that. We had an email from Justin. He says, before I became a vegetarian, I would regularly order a farm at Whataburger, which is cheese, bacon, sausage, chicken, and eggs. Now, Earth Burger gets me my quick fix. We must consume less in general, and especially red meat, if we're going to survive as a species. Boy, that farm thing, that's
incredible.
That's a little bit of everything right there.
Yeah, but so now he goes to Earth Burger, which is a chain. Do you know about Earth Burger, Adam Chandler?
I've heard of it, but I don't know enough about it. I know there are a lot of similar things to Earth Burger out there and that are becoming really popular right now.
And have you tried Earth Burger, Mike?
I have, and we're in the middle at the Express News of a 52 Weeks of Burger series. And my colleague Chuck Blount, who is like our go-to outdoor barbecue grilling guy, was the one who went to Earth Burger. And he ended up really enjoying it. And I myself, I like a good veggie burger. I like it best when it doesn't try to behave like meat, though.
That's the issue that people are trying to figure out. You know, is should it be, because the question that people have about, we were talking about Beyond Beef earlier, Mike, is that it was they make it look like these a beef burger. That's why it has the unhealthy or not so healthy components.
Yeah, it almost looks like it's bleeding while you cut into it.
And you know, and I guess,
is that progress?
I don't know. Well, let's go to another caller. The number is 210-614-8980. And Robert, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Why, thank you. I'm going to kind of go the other direction. I visited a friend in a mountain state, and it took us a couple days and him tricking us to realize their municipality doesn't allow fast food chains or corporations of any kind. Every restaurant was mom and pop. The price was not much different. The quality of food was 10 times better, and I really liked it. And it was something that made me consider moving to his neck of the woods.
Interesting. And where was this? Colorado, you said?
Yes, it was.
Okay. I don't know if that would work here. Probably not. That seemed like a crazy kind of an extreme restriction. Have you heard of that, Adam Chandler?
There absolutely have been fast food bans that have been sort of constructed either because they think communities think that fast food restaurants are ugly looking or that they're bad for community health. And it's been met with mixed results. Some people kind of find it elitist to say you can't have this kind of food, while other people have been supportive of it. But, you know, it hasn't really caught on in the way that you think it might, given how demanding people are of sort of change in the fast food industry.
But there's room probably for both. You can have a very local fast food type restaurants and also the national chain. We have a couple here still that are very local, Mike Sutter, things like Burger Boy. People are becoming Burger Boy fans.
Oh, yeah, and they've just expanded to a third location, and they don't show any signs of slowing down. We could also argue that San Antonio has hundreds of fast food places hiding in plain sight, and that's the taquerias around town.
Oh, yeah. That's always my first choice.
In 2017, I hit 365 of them, and I would say three-quarters of them could be classified, as fast food, given the speed, the convenience, and even having a drive-through. That turns out to be a big driver for me in determining whether a place is truly fast food.
So like Taco Tote or Taco Palenque or Tinka Taco.
Or Las Palapas.
Right. Chachos, these would be considered fast food.
Oh, I think so. If you can, they don't have to be a multiple chain, and there doesn't have to be any other sort of trappings of fast food involved with that, you know, sort of a corporate identity. It's all about the convenience factor.
So Adam Chandler, in your book, Drive Through Dreams, so we're talking about a very regional type of taste that we have in San Antonio. And does that become a challenge for the national chains?
Well, it's definitely a point of pride. You know, the Flying W for Whataburger is pretty much part of the Texas iconography. If you think about it, I feel like it's right up there with, the Astrodome is something that's just kind of this really symbolic. I mean, I won't put it in the same category as the Alamo by any stretch of the imagination, but you know, it's a recognizable sign, and people love it and are advocates for it in the way that someone in California likes In-N-Out Burger, for example, even though I think we all know it's not quite as good.
You trying to start a war over here?
Yeah, but you know, it's just a statement of fact. Okay, come on.
It's a statement of fact, and it's just another battle in the war. I think they started it, by the way. But the small chains don't offer familiarity, which is something that people who are in, at least on a mass scale, which is one of the aspects of it. You always know what you're going to get at a Wendy's or a Burger King. And for some people, that's actually a source of comfort, knowing, you know, wherever you go, there is this one thing that will probably be constant. And so that's one of the reasons why I think the bigger chains still succeed.
But do like other markets, like San Antonio, we have the original donut shop, which is a taco place. And that's a big favorite here in San Antonio. It seems to win a lot of local awards for its fare. It seems like other communities, you know, suffer. They don't have the rich Mexican food traditions that San Antonio has.
San Antonio is extremely lucky. I would give anything to have San Antonio's Mexican food scene anywhere else in the country.
But yeah, I'm going to completely agree with that.
But other places will have what, you know, like in the Midwest, they'll have what will they offer? You know.
Oh sure. I mean, there's Made Right, which is a kind of an Iowa chain that has what's called like a loose meat sandwich. It's sort of like it's kind of like a steak burger, but without a sauce. It's sort of it's local custom there. They have pork tenderloin sandwiches across the Midwest and custards and butter burgers. And then, in the Southeast, there is absolutely sort of a biscuit emphasis that you don't get necessarily in other parts of the country. So it's fascinating to see how regional and how local it gets with fast food. In California, you see all kinds of strange fast food concepts that you wouldn't imagine translating elsewhere, but somehow do. So, checking out local fast food chains, whether you're in, you know, Europe or Asia, or whether you're in, you know, Des Moines, is one of the great things about fast food. Is it's fascinating to see how the culture translates into the food.
And the nostalgia that people have for certain items and certain places, you know, maybe when we argue about the differences between Whataburger and In-N-Out is because people get married at Whataburger and have a lot of experiences there. It's culturally attuned to our lives.
Absolutely. I have a fond memory of going to Whataburger every night at 11 p.m. for breakfast on the weekends out with my friends in high school. And it was the last thing we did before our curfews. We'd all get to Keto's and we'd go home to make our curfews. Some of us would stay out and break the curfew, but that was our ritual. And it was sacred to us. And you know, when we get together, even though we've grown up a bit, it's one thing we still do from time to time that kind of reminds us of, our younger days.
Do you have a fast food memory that you want to share? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. Do you love or do you hate fast food? Do you think it's a scourge or is it a love-hate relationship? Do certain chains make you nostalgic? Do you think the industry has changed American life for the better or for the worse? Do you associate a fast food restaurant with a childhood or special memories? We want to hear your stories. 210-614-8980. Also, we really want to see how we can nudge our fast food habits into ways that are healthier, not just for us individually, but also for the entire planet. And what can we do along those ways as well? 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this.
Cattle was a big industry in the lower Rio Grande Valley in the 19th century. When that cattle went missing, the blame almost always fell on one group of people.
In South Texas, when newspapers reported on these crimes, it was always assumed that the bandits, the rustlers, were Mexicans or Indians.
Next time on Fronteras, the conquests of the Rio Grande Valley and the repercussions that are still felt today. Download Fronteras wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. When we talk about fast food, are we just talking about chains? because if you go to a place like Taquitos West on West Avenue, they're giving you food. You go walk up to the window and the taco comes at you pretty quick. That could be fast food. It's not a big chain, and it's very local, and it's very very delicious. So, you know, what are we talking about when we talk about fast foods? Also, gives a lot of people jobs. This is an employer, a lot of people their first jobs. So what should we be thinking about? How should we be framing when we talk about fast foods? The number is 210-614-8980. We're joined by Adam Chandler. His book is Drive-Through Dreams, A Journey Through the Heart of America's Fast Food Kingdom. And Mike Sutter, restaurant critic and food writer for the San Antonio Express News. And let's get Sabrina on the air. Sabrina, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Hello. Yes, I just wanted to share a quick memory that I had with my grandpa when he would pick me up from school. It was the only time I really got to eat, like, McDonald's. And I have memories of getting, like, the toys. They used to have VHS tapes at McDonald's. But now, as a mom, I'm trying to get my daughter to eat healthy. But that's what her grandpa does, too, is he picks her up after school, gets her McDonald's. And then here I am preparing a healthy meal, and then I'm like, oh, man, she already ate food. But it's hard to kind of, like, tell Grandpa, you know, don't feed her that, because he's just trying his hardest and trying to feed her and her cousins when he picks her up from school.
All right, Sabrina, thank you for that story. The marketing for these establishments, very strong. I remember growing up in San Antonio, and we'd see the national spots for McDonald's, right. And there was yet to be a chain in San Antonio, and how frustrating that was to experience that and know that that was beyond the reach of our little provincial part of the world. But, you know, how do you, as a parent, what would you tell that individual? Adam Chandler, what do you think?
Well, I do think there's been a transition over the years from McDonald's representing kind of a special treat to McDonald's becoming more of an everyday food. You know, the Center for Disease Control says on a given day, over a third of America will eat fast food, and that includes kids. So what's moved from being something that is meant to be a once in a while kind of treat has definitely become something that people rely on. And you know, part of that has to do with a lot of the ways the country has changed in terms of not having time, the presence of, you know, dual income households, and wages sort of not covering as much as they used to. So people lean on things like fast food more, not really even having money to sort of experiment in the kitchen if a kid decides he doesn't want something. And there have been really interesting studies put out about this. It takes a child at least seven times to try something before they really like it. And so it's complicated. It's really complicated to sort of sort these things out.
It's funny how our tastes change over time. I'm a restaurant critic now, but when I was a little kid going to McDonald's, all I wanted was a plain hamburger because I didn't like those rancid onions and those overheated pickles. I just wanted it plain and a vanilla shake, and then the dunking started.
And then here you are today, restaurant critic.
I know, and some people would argue that my tastes really haven't changed that much.
All right, another caller. This is Christina. Christina, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me on. When 20-something, actually 40 years ago, I used to take my kids to McDonald's, and I used to be able to feed three children myself on a 20-count chicken McNugget with fries. That was great. Now, as they are adults, now they have the choice to select salads at Whataburgers, McDonald's, anywhere. I love it. I love fast food.
All right, Christina, thank you for that. So the salads at these restaurants, many of them have them on the menu, and then sometimes when you ask for them, you'll get a sort of a look, and it's like, oh, we have a salad eater here. Do we still have salads? How often do people really go for the salads at these fast food restaurants? So Mike Sutter, what's your take on that?
Well, my personal experience was working at Jack in the Box, which was my first job, and it lasted for 9 years. And when we introduced salads, it was that thing where we just, everything stopped when somebody ordered a salad. We were like, did anybody even bother prepping salads this morning? Because they were such a rare order, until we introduced a taco salad, and then people started really ordering that. But I have to imagine that the health benefits of that weren't any different than just ordering that deep fried taco itself.
The deep fried taco is pretty awesome, by the way.
I'm going to agree with that. Having made and eaten thousands of those in my lifetime, I will still leave here today and go get two of them for around a buck.
Yeah, but I call them, it's a food-like substance. So that's the thing about that. But Adam Chandler, so when you have salads on the menu, is that really there to be purchased and enjoyed by the public, or is it there so that the restaurant can say, we have salads on the menu?
Well, it's definitely the latter. It's I think 1-2% of orders are salads, although it has come up as a side order, you know, and as a substitution for fries as an option, which is a good thing, but who's going to turn down the fries, right?
Me. I don't like fries.
Really? Wow. Okay.
David, I feel like I don't even know you, man.
Wow. So there's something that social scientists call a vicarious goal fulfillment, which is a fancy way of saying when you see a salad on the menu, it makes you feel better about everything else that's on the menu. And it can lead you, if you see it at a place like McDonald's, to say, well, this place has healthier stuff. That must mean maybe that they have your health in mind. And it's a trick we play on ourselves. And it's a trick that places, you know, with a lot of money in market research play on us to make us order what we really want, which may be, you know, a double quarter pounder with cheese.
So they can say, I'm so glad you have salad on your menu, but I'll take the double patty Whataburger with jalapenos.
Exactly.
All right. So let's go to Anthony on the phones. Anthony, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I just want to share a memory. When I was a little kid, me and my mom used to go to Whataburger, but I had trouble pronouncing it. So I always used to call it Whataburger. And so that's one of the things that I want to share with you. And I know as a teenager, at least what I remember, Wendy's burgers, I think the patty was actually bigger and the meat tastes different. So that's all I wanted to share with you.
All right. Well, I appreciate that. Whataburger, that's a good one. What about the nutrition information that these restaurants share, Adam Chandler? When did that come about, and do people follow that?
In the last probably 10 years, it's become, in certain cities, it's become mandated for restaurants with more than 10 or 15 or 20 chains or locations to post calorie counts. And most chains do it online. They haven't done it nationally because it keeps getting delayed. As you can imagine, Congress has a lot of pushes and pulls in terms of influence in making this actually happen. But there have been some studies that have shown that when you actually post the calorie count, it doesn't make that big of a difference in the way people order. Either they don't care, or they don't think of calories as being necessarily bad, or calories may not even be the best sort of indication of what something healthy really is. So it's kind of a mixed bag when it comes to it. It definitely changes my behavior. When I go to baseball games, you know, in certain cities, and I see that a tub of popcorn has like 2,500 calories or something crazy, I do something else, and it makes me really sad.
And Mike Sutter with Express News, those calorie counts, do you think they matter to people when they make their choices?
No, I don't think it matters when they're making their choices, but you do want to look at something to see where it plays into your overall calorie count for the day. There's a way to incorporate this into your weekly diet without just breaking your calorie bank.
Okay. Kathy has called in. And Kathy, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Okay, my favorite memory is driving through a fast food restaurant in a town that we didn't know how to pronounce. I don't know, it was Bernie or Waxahachie or Chapultepec or something. So we drove into a fast food restaurant, and we asked the lady, how do you pronounce this place? And she looks at us sort of funny. You know, they're always so friendly people in fast food joints. And she moves her mouth very carefully, and she says, Burger King.
Awesome. Thank you for that story. I'm going to go straight to Linda, who's called in. Linda, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Great. Hi. So I like this question about what is fast food. We have, you know, some places around us, Longhorn Cafe, Biggs, they make burgers, and it's all made to order. Same thing with Five Guys. When you walk in, like maybe the French fries are already done because they have to make a lot at a time. but the burgers are not sitting under a heat lamp. Like one time I stopped at some chain and I asked for one of the healthy chicken sandwiches. So it was the one without the breading. And this chicken tasted like the container that it had been sitting in for 4 hours. And so, you know, I wonder, even though places where you go to a counter, they don't have a drive-through, but you go to a counter, you order food and it's made to order, same health issues, you know, high calories, high fat, high salt, but it tastes better and it's still fast. So,
all right, Linda, so Adam Chandler, how pre-made is the product?
Well, they're starting to make them fresher to order. McDonald's has been one of the ones that, in particular, they had frozen beef, and now they're experimenting with fresh beef because these are people want better food now, and they're in a lot of places they're willing to pay for it, especially millennials and sort of younger generations are willing to shell out a little bit more for something that they perceive to be healthier or fresher to make. But yeah, it's depending on where you go, you might have something that's made 15-20 minutes beforehand that's just kind of been sitting there, especially if there's, you know, a big lunch rush and there's some leftover. But, you know, there are rules to turn things over that don't always get followed. And then sometimes you might get something fresh. It's a mixed bag. That's one of the things about fast food for sure.
All right. We're going to take a break. The number to call in, 210-614-8980. When we come back, I'm going to ask Adam which fast food restaurants are most successful, most popular nationwide. What are the top restaurants? I also want to say, well, who has the best French fries? Maybe I should try those. Maybe I'll change my mind about French fries. 210-614-8980. The source continues after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Are you sitting in the drive-thru right now waiting for that hot and delicious, whatever it is that you ordered? We're talking about fast foods and what are the choices, what are the options, and what is your emotional connection to your favorite fast food place? 210-614-8980. Let's go to Richard. Richard, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi there. Listen, this is a jack-in-the-box memory from 1968.
All right.
I don't know if you guys were even around at that time or not, but anyway, it was in Houston. I was working with a rock and roll band out of San Antonio called The Children, and our producer, Leland Rogers, would give us $10 a day to eat on, and we would go to jack-in-the-box, and $10 would feed six of us. I don't think you can do that today, but at that time, yeah, life was a lot cheaper and simpler at that time.
All right, Richard, thank you for that memory. 1968, you could eat for quite well back then. So let me go to Adam Chandler. His book is Drive Through Dreams, A Journey Through the Heart of America's Fast Food Kingdom. How do you rank these fast food chains? Who is the Burger King for real?
The Burger King itself, you know, it's hard to say which chain actually is the best, and that's why we have such fun arguing about it, because it's so subjective. And then a lot of times it just comes down to customer service. A lot of it comes down to consistency. That's why regional chains do so much better. The surprise chain isn't a burger chain at all. It's Chick-fil-A, which is consistently winning best customer service rankings every year, over and over and over again. An amazing fact about it is that despite being about half the size as Kentucky Fried Chicken, they earn more revenue than KFC does, despite being half its size and closed one day a week, which is really kind of a credit to their operation.
Well, you know what the key is to that customer service perception is that when you say thank you, they don't say no problem. Adam, do you know what they say? They say my pleasure.
My pleasure, right.
Oh, okay. Which chain has the most franchises, most establishments?
It is Subway, surprisingly, because, you know, you don't think of it as being that big, but it has an outsized influence. It's easy to open a Subway shop relative to the other chains. So it has the most physical locations, but in terms of sales, it's not nearly as high as, say, McDonald's.
And there's also been a contraction with Subway recently. They've closed a lot of stores.
Yes, they've had a tough time in the last couple of years. They haven't quite figured out how to market themselves. You know, sandwiches aren't necessarily as popular, and they haven't found a way to adapt the way that, say, Arby's has, which has really done a lot of wacky things to get people's attention.
How come Starbucks, is that, we consider that fast food now?
I personally don't consider it fast food, which is weird because I think Dunkin' Donuts is fast food. You know, a lot of it comes down to cost, the difference between, you know, a $5 hamburger that you get as part of a combo meal and, you know, with access to a drive-thru versus a place like Five Guys, which doesn't really offer combo meals. It costs more like $10 to have a fries, a Coke, and a burger. And so I think that's usually the dividing line between the two, but it's hard to nail down. It's kind of a moving target.
Okay, let's go to Pauline on the phones. Pauline, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to comment in that for me growing up, I lived in different places due to the military, and that one of my family favorite places was McDonald's, and just to see how each country that we would go visit to, how there's differences between their menus, such as in France, they have their country potatoes, which is potato wedges, and that they're more popular over there versus French fries, and how each country they have something a little bit different of what is their American interpretation of what is fast food. And so, yeah.
All right. Thanks for that. You think in France they'd get French fries right. Let's go to Johnny on the phones. Johnny, welcome to Source.
Hi. Yes, I just wanted to make a comment and a question. I just wanted to comment on how I wish, you know, growing up that there was more plant-based options when going to fast food restaurants. I just had a question. Do you see that transition more into these fast food chains and restaurants as far as having more plant-based options and you know, as that being a good thing?
Do you mean like the meat substitute, Johnny, or like leafy greens?
Well, the meat substitute, yes. More, I mean, I know y'all touched on the salad, but more on the meat substitute. You know, I don't know, mention the name, you know, Beyond and things like that. I know there's Taco Cabana here, just added stuff to the menu. You know, quite a few fast food chains here locally in San Antonio, you know, where I'm at. Mm-hmm. That Burger King just came out with the Impossible. You know, I was just curious as to y'all's thoughts on.
Okay. So, Johnny, thank you for that. Do we have enough data points to figure out if this is a trend yet, Adam Chandler?
I think so, because it's appearing in so many places. There has to be enough traction. You know, Dunkin' Donuts has a Beyond Meat breakfast sandwich. Del Taco in California is introducing plant-based meat in tacos and burritos. Hardee's, enough chains have started jumping onto this. KFC even had a plant-based chicken pop-up in Georgia recently that sold out really quickly. So people are curious about it. And I think there are other alternatives too that might be interesting. Sonic did something really fascinating. It's called a blended burger where it's 70% meat and 30% mushrooms. And I think that might be actually more of an answer to sort of converting people to think about how they eat meat differently, because, you know, that is something that makes a big difference in terms of total meat use, but it's also a lot healthier for you to have something that's 70% beef and, you know, 30% mushrooms. So that might be another way that this kind of unfolds as the trend picks up. But
and so you see this as not as the when we talked about earlier about salads just being looking pretty on the menu, that this is actually a people are going to be ordering this and expecting it, and this is something that they want.
Yeah, it's a fun way to experiment. You know, if the Impossible Burger is, you know, is Bernie Sanders, and this blended burger is a Joe Biden, you know, it's sort of, it's a little bit more in the middle, and it represents a compromise between something, you know, traditional and something a little bit different. So I think it's interesting to see what's going to happen with it. I'd love to see something like a blended burger become more something that people experiment with, because it's an incremental shift.
Right, towards more sustainable way of providing for so many people and still keeping it affordable and giving them what they want. Let's go to another caller. This is Jenna. And Jenna, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello. My concern is with all the trash and plastics that are being just mass-produced with every time somebody goes through the drive-thru. I think that needs to be addressed as well as far as the environment. I'm about trying to come up with new ways for all that trash.
All right, Jenna, thank you for that. So, Adam Chandler, fast food restaurants, they produce a lot of trash, plastic straws, a lot of plastic straws. So are they going to be moving towards paper straws?
You know, if people want them, it will. But there's a lot of skepticism about it. I know Whataburger has had some issues with styrofoam cups that people have been pushing them about. And different chains react differently to it. If you're a franchisee, you know, if you're not a corporate chain, but a franchisee owner, if you're just someone who has one or two restaurants and you switch product and it makes a difference in how your sales come out, then making a change could really affect your business. So I do think it's the responsibility of companies to find solutions that people really want. But it's hard to imagine yourself in the shoes of somebody who, you know, is a small business owner that owns one or two franchises and, you know, sees a significant drop when the cup that people like to drink their coffee in is no longer available and maybe they go somewhere else. But it's a super important issue.
I'll tell you what, too, neighborhoods take that stuff seriously. We used to have the police come by in the morning after a graveyard shift and make us go out and pick up trash in the neighborhoods that had our name on it. It's like we were suddenly responsible for picking up the trash generated by our business.
And but plastic, the paper straws, do they really work? Or I mean, do they suck? I mean, in a good way.
I think they last for as long as they need to last. If you're still nursing on your drink 4 hours later, I'm not sure it's the straw's fault for not keeping up with you.
And so, Adam Chandler, how do people communicate what they want to a fast food corporation? Do you tell the clerk, and he's like, "Well, sir, I don't want to work here," or do you send an email? What do you go on social media, because they're really present on social media? So, Adam, what do you do?
Yeah, I think social media is a great way to reach, and that's where a lot of the conversations are kind of happening. You know, people are making petitions and putting out sort of pledges to push big companies to change their practices. And that's one of the ways to do it for sure. I think that they also test these products to see whether people internally in the company or in certain markets like them and make a decision based on that. Most of the time it's with food, but I think you'll start seeing it more with products like cups and straws and other things, just because they want to be sure they bring something to market that isn't going to make it hard for business to succeed and for their franchisees to do well. So it's a bind.
And they do pay attention to their social media, Adam.
Oh, they're obsessed with their social media. Some of the great stories have
They're hilarious. Have come
out. They're amazing. There is the story of a kid in Nevada who wanted a free year of chicken nuggets from Wendy's. And so he asked them, "How many retweets do I need to get a free year of nuggets?" And they said 18 million, which is impossible.
Right. Out of time. So did he get it?
He didn't get it, but they gave it to him anyway.
Adam Chandler is the author of Drive Through Dreams, A Journey Through the Heart of America's Fast Food Kingdom. Mike Sutter is a former employee of Jack in the Box. He's a restaurant critic and food writer for the San Antonio Express News. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Ken Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia, and Jan Rospiedad. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.